We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
In today's episode of the Sixers Beat, Rich and I discuss the report the Sixers are being investigated for potential tampering and salary cap circumvention. We talk about the proposed arena at 10th and Market, and we weigh in on whether or not we think this is the best team of the Joel Embiid era. Enjoy the podcast. All right, welcome everybody. This is Derek Bonner, joined by Rich Hoffman on Sixers Beat, part of the Athletics Podcast Network. How you doing, Rich?
Derek, I am doing fine. We actually have some non-basketball stuff to talk about. It's actually, look, we complain a lot about not having stuff to talk about, but for July 30th, a decent amount of Sixers news going on right now.
Yeah, no, look, when you get into late July and August, you don't always have podcast material, but because it's the Sixers and because off seasons are never normal, we do. So basically, there was a report from Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN that the Sixers were being investigated for tampering. Let me pull up his report here. And there's really two parts of this. There's tampering and then there's cap circumvention. We will get into both. But this from Adrian Wojnarowski: the NBA has opened an investigation into the Philadelphia 76ers for possible tampering and early contact centered on the franchise's summer free agency class of James Harden, PJ Tucker, and Daniel House, sources told ESPN. So that right there is sort of like the tampering aspect of it. It is really early contact is what you're focusing on there. We've seen that happen a couple times here in recent memory, most notably with the Bucks 2 years ago, and then with the Heat and the Bulls last year. In all three instances, they had to forfeit a second round pick. Not the end of the world. If the Sixers have to lose a second round pick here in the coming years, it will not doom the franchise. That is not the big concern. Bigger concern is cap circumvention. And this, again, is also from Woj's report. One of the central elements of the league's inquiry includes questions on Harden's decision to decline a $47.4 million player option for 2022-23, take a pay cut on a new two-year $68 million deal, sources said. Around the league, there have been questions about whether there is already a handshake agreement in place on a future contract, which would be in violation of collective bargaining rules. And it's that handshake agreement on a future contract, which is really what would be circumvention in this case. It would basically be, in a hypothetical world, the Sixers came up to James Harden and said, look, we know that you're going to opt into that $47.4 million contract. How about rather than doing that, you sign for you take a pay cut, a $33 million contract, and we will make it up to you on your next contract. We will pay you more than we otherwise would have to make up the difference for what you gave up to allow us to go out and sign PJ Tucker and Daniel House. That would be salary cap circumvention. Historically, the league has come down very hard. Historically, there haven't been all that many instances of this, in part because I think the league came down so hard on it. But the biggest example, the most recent example, the one that comes to the top of my mind, the only one I can really think of that has been proven, was the Minnesota Timberwolves in the late 90s with Joe Smith. And basically what happened is they lost, the Wolves lost Tom Gugliotta. They had to replace him. They didn't really have much cap space to work with. So they ended up signing Joe Smith. And, you know, Joe Smith was still young at that point. I think it was his fourth year in the league, but he was a disappointing number one overall pick. But because he was young, his market value, he still had some value in the market. But they signed him to a one-year contract worth right around $2 million. And they would wind up signing him to three consecutive one-year contracts in the $2 million range. And all this was worked out beforehand. You know, they had not even really a handshake. They had it in writing, which is where they really screwed up. But they had it worked out where they would sign him to those 3 1-year contracts, get his bird rights, and then they're going to offer him a multi-year $80 million contract to sort of make up for the money that he had, you know, gave up by signing those 1-year deals below market value. They're going to make that up to him with that bigger contract once they had the bird rights and could go over the cap to do so. When the NBA found this out, they came down very hard on the Wolves in a way that, quite frankly, I've never seen before. They fined the team $3.5 million, not a big deal. But they then stripped them of 5 consecutive first-round picks. I think they ended up giving at least one of those back to them, but initially they stripped them of 5 first-round picks. They voided the contract for Joe Smith, so that agreed-upon $80 million contract. They didn't even have the bird rights to execute that. So Smith ended up losing out. And then they also, I think they even, you know, suspended without pay Kevin McHale, the GM, for a year. So they came down very, very hard. That's a very serious allegation. And really what we're talking about here, you're talking about two very different things. And I think that's why you have to separate them. And look, a lot has changed since the late 90s. You know, 24 years ago, talking about a different commissioner, number of revisions to the CBA. Penalty might not be, there might not be a one-to-one comparison here on the penalty. But the NBA treats, you know, tampering and circumvention very differently. And they're very different allegations. And one is much, much, much more severe. So if the Sixers did actually circumvent the salary cap, and if the NBA can actually prove that, which would be tough, the penalty would be much, much, much higher than tampering. Much higher.
Yeah. So I would say there are two elements to this. So let's identify the first one. PJ, I would assume, and look, all I know right now is what has been reported. The Sixers, they say they are cooperating with this this investigation. The first half of it, the tampering element, the PJ Tucker stuff had been reported for a few weeks and really, I mean, a couple of days before. Now, I want to add a couple things here, though. How many deals get reported in the first hour of free agency?
Sure.
And you tell me there was no contact before on any of them?
Of course there were.
Of course. So,
I guess what I would say here is the league doesn't care. The league's goal here is not to stop teams from talking to players early. They just don't want you to be out in the open and brazen about it. Like, that's really, like, when they take away a second round pick, they're not like, oh, this will stop teams from tampering. No, it won't. They just don't want you to flaunt it in public.
Yeah. And so may the Sixers get punished for, like you said, letting it too far out in the open. Yeah, I think there's a chance. And I think, like you said, second round pick, that is the general penalty for this. It's so funny that we've come full circle with the process and second round picks where, oh, we used to talk about, oh my gosh, do they have 12, 14 second round picks over the next 6 years? And now it's like, yeah, fine. Take it away. Yeah, well, that's fine. I mean, it's going to be the 55th pick in the draft anyway. So who cares? You know,
I mean, look, when you're talking about that 2014 Sixers team, you didn't have very many guaranteed roster spots that, you know, you could fit a couple of second round picks on that roster. It's a little tougher to fit second round picks right now.
So that part is less serious. And I would also say that part, to me, it feels like they could be found guilty on that part. And
it seems like once you've sort of alluded to it, once the NBA starts looking into this, it's probably pretty easy to find instances of tampering.
Yeah. And does it feel a little bit selective? Yeah. Like I almost feel like this is going to happen to teams every offseason. It's like, all right, last year, Bulls, Heat, that was your turn. You know, you made your big free agent signings in Lowry and Lonzo Ball last year. All right, the Sixers, they got out in front of it, PJ Tucker. And by the way, if the penalty is all you have to do is give up 1 second round pick for PJ Tucker to make sure the PJ Tucker deal is in place and you're going to get him settled, it's like Aldo Rain in at the end of Inglourious Basterds. I make that deal. It's not a bad deal. So Yeah, that part is, it's whatever. We'll see what happens there. It seems like you would be able to prove that considering the reporting was out there. The second part, like you said, more serious, but you mentioned a couple of things. Joe Smith, that was in writing. First off, there was some of that stuff.
That whole thing is so funny to me because first of all, they risked all that for Joe Smith. Like, Joe Smith is the definition of replacement level. And granted, he was still young at the time. He was a former number one pick. But the dude never made an all-star game. He never made an all-NBA team. They risked all of that. Basically, they squandered. Not, I won't want to say squandered because who knows what they would have done with those draft picks. But they really risked Kevin Garnett's prime for Joe Smith. It's hysterical to me. But also, it's funny to me because they put it in writing. You can't put something illegal in writing like that. And look, the agent that was working with them with Joe Smith was also Kevin Garnett's agent. So I guess he had a little bit of sway here in making sure that they couldn't screw over Joe Smith, but you can't put that in writing. Like, it's mind boggling. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's a good point. And honestly, you're showing your age a little bit, knowing this era of basketball a little bit better than I do. I was a little too young for this. Obviously, just knowing the CBA and the salary cap were completely different in terms of, you know, that was the era when guys could get like 7-year contracts. Right. And it was a little bit different. Yeah. So I think the big issue with this is, well, let's just say this, like we've talked about the handshake agreement before. You've written about this. Yep. Like, is there something on the back end here? Like, is that part of this? Like, it's not something that is coming out of left field, this
no.
suspicion.
But it will take far more than a suspicion to cost the Sixers multiple first round picks. Far, far, far more. Basically, but the way I would phrase it.
They don't have first round picks.
No, they don't.
That's the other issue.
Well, and I think that was actually, when you say that the Wolves were forfeited 5 first round picks, I think 2 of them they had already traded at that point. So it was like a technicality. I think one of them they ended up getting back. But yeah, the Sixers don't have a ton of first round picks. Still, it will take far more than you and I speculating or talking out loud or wondering or even executives wondering. It will take cold, hard proof. And unless Daryl Morey was a dumbass and left some of this in writing. An unbelievable dumbass. And you would think Morey and Harden have a strong enough relationship where like Harden doesn't need that kind of an assurance to take that pay cut. Then I think this is going to go nowhere.
That would be insane if they had it in writing. I mean, you could, if it is not in writing, even if there is like an actual dollar amount attached to this, they could all say no. And the NBA has nothing. You can't prove that. So I would be surprised. I wonder if Michael Rubin is a little bit involved in this. Although, you know, Adam Silver was kind of on the record being like, hey, this guy could tamper now that he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's part of the normal world and not running a team.
Interesting how that was made a big deal. Like, other team owners don't have billionaire friends that they could theoretically do this with. Like, Michael Rubin's the only billionaire fan of a team who could funnel money elsewhere. Like, there's these risks everywhere when you get associated with these kind of billionaires.
Speaking of billionaires, did you know, this is a little off topic, but I'd read the story this week and I couldn't believe it. Dan Snyder, who's like one of the worst people and owners in sports,
for sure.
Do you know he has been hiding out from a subpoena on his yacht in international waters in the Mediterranean? And he finally like waited Congress out to the point where he avoided the subpoena. Wow. I mean, that is the most rich guy shit I've ever heard in my life. Like, that's like Bond villain type shit.
It's a different world. Yep.
You said, okay. Yeah. But can they prove it? I'd be surprised if they could. And, you know, like we said, I think you've termed it as, well, what if it's a wink, wink deal too? Like, that's, if it's a wink, wink deal, then there's going to be no proof on that. So, you know, I wonder who sent this. I would be surprised if South Florida maybe made a call to the NBA headquarters, sure. Because let's be real. Like, you know, Woj in his report said PJ Tucker, Daniel House, James Harden. Nobody gives a shit about Daniel House. No, nobody cares about that signing. Like, I mean, I care about Daniel House, but nobody in the league is like going to lose their mind about Daniel House.
You don't think that complaint came from the Utah Jazz?
No, I don't. Whoa.
Yeah, did you even remember he was on Utah Jazz before I said that? Because
the Utah Jazz, I don't think Danny Ainge remembers it with all these picks he's got coming in. No, Daniel House signing the biannual exemption at, or agreeing to the biannual exception at 6:45 PM is not, that's not getting anybody in the league mad. So it's clearly the PJ Tucker part. And that's where I think the Harden part comes in, because Harden had to take less money for PJ Tucker to come in here. As you pointed out on Twitter yesterday, I do think it is, I don't know if it's ironic, it's funny that whoever is making this complaint is bringing up, oh, the salary cap circumvention, where I think most of the other contenders in the league are rooting for, yeah, Daryl, give him $1 billion next year.
No, I'm terrified that they might have an agreement in place. I'm terrified of it. We talked about this numerous times on the podcast. Like, if he has a slight bounce back season, they give him way too much money, or they already agreed to give him way too much money. I find that completely terrifying, but it will help them this year. Look, I think tampering, early communication, probably a decent chance they get punished. The punishment would be small. Cap circumvention, big punishment if they did. Low chance that they actually get caught doing it. That is the one the NBA actually wants to dissuade teams from doing. That is the one the NBA treats as a big deal. The other one is more like we kind of wish you wouldn't, but we understand you will, so we'll, you know, just don't make it public.
Yeah, and look, if they do get caught, we will have a big scandal on our hands and a big, another big talking point.
Has there been one of these like real cap circumventions that have cost teams picks? I know that there was a lot of talk about it with the Clippers and Kawhi, but nothing ever came of that. I don't know if there's been another one since Joe Smith that is really comparable.
I just think teams are too smart now, yeah. Right? Like, I think they just, if they do have these conversations, they're face to face. So, and even I'm just thinking too, like if it's like a wink, wink deal, if it's like, look, you know, if you play well, we'll take care of you. Like, that's,
well, and the other,
I feel
thing
like
is,
there's like, a level of trust between Maury and Harden where I don't think they need, a contract to be drawn up.
Well, and the other thing with the Joe Smith situation, because there was evidence, they voided Joe Smith's contract. He didn't get bird rights. He wasn't able to sign that $80 million deal that he was counting on to make it worth signing those three short-term deals beforehand. If there is a wink-wink agreement between Harden and Maury, it's in Harden's best interest not to document that and not to leak it too, because then that will, he's not getting that then. Like, there would have to be a colossal fuck-up for the Sixers to lose multiple first-round picks in it.
I think that's the perfect way to put it. Small chance. If it does happen, man, did they fuck up.
Yeah.
So we'll see where this goes. I mean, sometimes these things, like, I remember last year, didn't the announcements for the Bulls and the...
Oh, yeah, it was months. It was months and months and months.
That was
well
months.
The season.
And by the way, did you see, I think Bobby Marks tweeted, he was like, look, they can investigate this, the Harden part, for years. Like, this doesn't have to be closed this year, so... Is this just going to be like hanging over the entire team? I don't really know.
We'll see. Like I said, I don't, we'll see. I wouldn't shock me if something came out of it, but I think it's much more likely to be the tampering, not the circumvention. All right, moving on. What else did we have here to talk about?
Arena.
Oh yeah. There was the proposal for the arena at 10th and Market. I guess I don't know if I wrote a little bit about this. I don't know if I have too many strong opinions on it. You know, I think where I always go with these, you know, downtown arenas, it'd be really cool, but it's a logistical nightmare and it impacts a lot of people. And I do sort of think that maybe that 10th and Market spot, if you're going to have a downtown arena in Philly, that might be the right spot, in part because so many of the regional rails terminate right underneath there, in part because it's all, you know, commercial district. You're not displacing residents by putting it there. That being said, I think they're going to face a lot of opposition, especially when you start talking about the Chinatown associations. And it seems like it's a relatively low probability, although they seem to be pushing it pretty hard.
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. I'm talking to some people that, yes, the Chinatown neighborhood, which is right near there, it's not that exact neighborhood, but it's a couple blocks away. And look, when you have an arena, you're building a sports arena, that's a huge disruption. I think you put it well in your piece this week when you said, like, you know, the Sixers proposal, it sounds good. It's also a lot of like marketing talk. You know, it's a lot of like,
It was almost all marketing talk. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we're, sorry, my doorbell is ringing right now. It's mostly marketing talk. It's, there's not a lot of specifics in there. Like this is real life shit too. This is like Philadelphia taxpayers. This is not, we're talking about tampering charges, the Sixers getting fined for maybe circumventing the salary cap. Like this is a real life issue. And I think when you try to build an arena, even if I understand why they want to build an arena, they want to have their own building, and their current building is kind of a dump too, if we're being honest. So it makes some sense. It's going to face some opposition. It's going to face scrutiny, and rightfully so. But there's going to be scrutiny on a bunch of things. The neighborhood, which, like, look, I wouldn't want an arena in my neighborhood. So I think that's something that they're going to have to talk to. And by the way, they made a big stink about, you know, we're going to be inclusive with all of the community leaders. They didn't really talk to the Chinatown people that much.
No, beforehand. It was shocking. So, that was shocking.
So that's a screw up there. There's the tax issue too. They say that there's no public funds they're going to take. That might technically be true, but there's also a tax break on that site that I think they're going to try and get. So it's probably not true. And that, like, look, my general point is they gave a lot of general ideas to start. And I agree that I think it's in Center City. It's probably the best spot, but there are issues with it. Like you said, traffic. I mean, I think SEPTA is going to have to be beefed up a ton. There's a lot of different issues. Like you, I think it's generally a pretty cool idea. And I do have a little bit of sympathy for the Sixers in that I don't know where you put an arena in Philadelphia if you don't put it at the sports complex. Like, I don't, like, where are you putting it?
Yeah.
I don't know what neighborhood you can put it in that's not going to have some of these issues. I think this specific area probably has less issues than most of these places. But, you know, they had this nice big rollout that they really tried to push the idea on people. We'll see if it happens. But
they did their media tour. And like you said, it's a little surprising that they did their media tour, but never bothered to talk to the people it would impact. It was just, if you're trying to engineer goodwill, like, I don't know. I don't know if that was a way to go about it, but.
Well, and I think part of the reason why they didn't do that is because they wanted this big media tour. They wanted it to be a big surprise. And because
they know there's going to be opposition to it too. They're going to have to convince a lot of people about the merits of it. And quite frankly, you know, I love their 76th place and the benefits and, like, you know, what they're listing as a priority. Your priority is to make a shit ton of money and increase the value of the franchise.
Yeah.
A lot of the other stuff they talk about, it's like, I don't know how much it actually does for the community. A lot of the other stuff they list, you know.
Well, look, in past places too, there have been studies that arenas do not really help the community around them. And look, I mean, if they're not taking money for it, then that's a little bit of a different story. But, you know, there's other issues with, like, DC, like that arena down there did not help their Chinatown. So there are definitely some issues. They're real life things.
We've got a lot of time for them to convince the people who need to be convinced, which includes me a little bit.
Well, and by the way, too, a lot of time is a big part of this. That's a lot of time. I mean, we're talking nine years from now. They got plenty of time, which, by the way, I think a lot of people, and look, we've talked about this. I think people in city council will probably, you know, mention this at some point too. 9 years is a long time. So, like, if they say no here, where are you going next?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's another city right across the Ben Franklin Bridge that some people might mention.
And we already know they're willing to give you tax subsidies. They've done it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On that beautiful practice facility that we go into a lot. So this issue's a little bit above our pay grade. I would say we were kind of just looking at it as citizens and whatever. But I do think there is going to be more opposition than we saw on that first day, for sure.
Yep.
But look, I want to add, though, I don't blame the Sixers for wanting a new building.
No,
I agree. It is their right to try and build a new arena.
Oh, they absolutely should want a new arena. I don't even begrudge them for trying to put it downtown, but I also understand why a lot of people will oppose that.
Yeah, it's one of those where it's like, I kind of understand
Yeah.
Both sides here to an extent.
I'm just skeptical whether or not they will push it through. All right. So one of the other things that came out recently was, I think it was started by Zach Lowe. He mentioned it on ESPN. And then you wrote about it recently, and a lot of people talked about it, whether or not this is the best team of the Joel Embiid era. And realistically, there would only be one competitor. That is the 2018-19 team, the quadruple doink team, with Embiid, Simmons, Redick, Butler, and Harris. You wrote about this. I briefly mentioned it in a newsletter. What's your overall? Is this the best team of the Joel Embiid era?
I think the main difference between this team and that team, if you remember, the way Brett Brown described that group was that we had he was saying we. It's not me. Not me saying we. Got to be a good big journalist here. Big J. Got to keep the objectivity. But he was saying that like our team has had three teams this year. You know, we had the Cub Dario team, we had the Wilson Chandler Jimmy team, and then we got Tobias, and that team was all things go. That's what he said. So this group's going to be different because I think this group is pretty much set now, you know, unless James Harden gets his contract voided this in a couple of months. But this group is going to be the team that the Sixers have all year, which is a huge advantage because, I mean, I do think sometimes we don't overrate that team, but that team turned it on really quickly in the playoffs. Yeah. That team at the end of the year, they had like a couple of weeks of, oh shit, this could be really good. But it was the end of the season and they had already taken their foot off the gas. Like they were getting their ass kicked at the end of that year. Jimmy was not shooting any threes.
No, he was coasting in the regular season. 100%.
But, you know, so I think this is going to be a different group, and it's important to me too. I think they should be going after the number one seed. They should be doing the same thing they did in 2020, 2021. They should try to get home court advantage because if you had to tell me they're probably a tier below the Bucks and the Celtics. I think there is a reasonable argument they could get to the bottom level of that tier if Harden is awesome and everything goes right. But your best chance to win is if you make those guys play on the road to start. That's how it's going to work. So, and the other good news about that is that I don't think it's going to take some Herculean effort from Joel Embiid to get those 53, 54 wins or whatever the hell it takes to ultimately get the number one seed. You have enough quality depth here where Matisse Thybulle and George Niang are the 9th and 10th guys right now. That's pretty good. You're going to be fine with that. They might be 10th and 11th. I mean, Shake Milton's in there too. I don't know where he would jump in there. So they're not going to need that level of heavy lifting. And I just think back to last year specifically, just Joel Embiid and Seth Curry just putting the team on their back. And Maxey too, when Embiid was out. It was a hard 50. What, they went 51 last year? 50, whatever. It was a hard 50-51 win season last year. They had to really stress to get to that number. And then Harden came and it was a little bit easier. But I think this definitely has an argument to be the best team they ever have. They've had with Embiid, and the only thing that could stop that maybe is a tampering investigation now.
As you all know by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using the BetMGM lines to make all our picks. And we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use the bonus code TABASKETBALL and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,000 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code TABASKETBALL. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game. Claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic.
21 plus to wager. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Nevada, New York, and Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Colorado, D.C., Illinois, Indiana, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. Call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona, 1-800-522-4700 in Kansas and Nevada, 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts, 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa, 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. In Ontario, if you have questions or concerns about your gambling or someone else close to you, please contact Connects Ontario at 1-866-531-2600 to speak to an advisor free of charge. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, and Utah, and other states where prohibited. Promotional offers not available in Nevada and New York.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use the bonus code TABASKETBALL and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,000 first bet offer on your first wager.
Yeah, look, I think what you said about having more depth is 100% true. You know, I think that team, that Butler, Tobias team, they trade away a lot of their depth to get those players. I think what you said about having continuity is key, which is weird because we still talk about Embiid and Harden like they're forming chemistry, but they've also had a lot more time here than that group had. I think both of those are key. And also, I think Joel Embiid just a better player right now. He's a much better offensive player, much more diverse, much more ready to counter all of the moves that were made to slow him down in the playoffs. And you and quite frankly, Harden, despite his limitations, is the player who's most capable of creating easy looks for him. I think he is in a better spot to succeed. I think when you add all of those, and look, I think the 2018-19 team, you know, they certainly had more defensive depth. They had more defensive versatility in their starting lineup. You can make cases for that, for Jimmy Butler, and how good of a player he was. But I think depth, continuity, Embiid being at another level, I think all of that, I think this is probably a pretty easy answer for me, that this is the best team Joel Embiid has had. Now, will they have more success in that team? TBD. You know, that team did take the eventual champions to a very heartbreaking final moment of Game 7. That team, which doesn't sound like a lot, but of the second round exits, that was certainly the best performance they have had. But if Harden is able to recapture even a little bit, I think they have a real chance to get to a conference finals. It would be a disappointment if they don't. And I think this is the best overall team of the Embiid era, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, and I think when I talk about tiers, that 2018-19 team is the perfect example. That team, in my opinion, was not as good as the Kawhi. The Kawhi team was better.
Agreed.
But they were in the same tier. They were able to play with them, and they were, you know, they were a bounce away, and that was not a fluke. Like, they needed more things to go right in that series. Toronto was pretty cold shooting, especially in a lot of those Philly games. But they were able to beat that team. So can the Sixers get into that tier where they have the ability to get out of the Eastern Conference? We will see. It is funny. I mean, it is a little bit of an off-season topic, because if we look back to this time last year, it's like, man, the Nets, they're in a tier by their own. So that changes during a season. Yeah. We got a lot of time for that to sort out. And then sometimes the season isn't even that telling. Sometimes a team that just been shitting the bed all season turns on, flips a switch in the playoffs. So, but yeah, sure. I definitely feel better about this team than I have in years, honestly. So,
and then your boy Seth Partnow released his, speaking of tiers, released his his list of NBA player tiers, not teams tiers. And what I think Embiid was in 1B, Harden was in 2B. Where was Maxey? Maxey was 4A. Yeah, 4A. Tobias was 4B, and then PJ Tucker was somewhere in 5. Do I have that right? And all that off the top of my head.
Yep. I think you got that all right.
Was there any one of those that you strongly disagreed with?
I think Harden is the biggest question mark.
Yeah, but in the positive way. I think he gave him more credit than I would have. What would that place? I think that would place Harden like right around the 10th or 12th best player in the league, somewhere in that range.
Might be a little bit lower, but yeah, it's top 15. Yeah. He gave Harden the benefit of the doubt, but you know what? Seth's been pretty consistent in that he takes a while to move off his position on some of these, especially for these established stars who have been great for a long period of time, like James Harden. And it's not a fun exercise. I know some people are probably mad that I think Jokic got in the 1A category and Embiid was 1B.
Was it Jokic, KD, Curry, and Giannis, right? That was 1A? Yeah.
Oh, well. Joel Embiid was in the same tier as Luka Doncic. That's pretty good company.
Well, and also a big thing of Seth's rating is that he values playoff success. And all four of those players have just had, well, three of those four players have had significantly more playoff success than Joel Embiid. And the fourth is won back MVP back-to-back years. So, like, what are you going to do?
If you want to call it Mickey Mouse, like the Lakers championship too, but Jokic just had more playoff success too.
Sure.
He did. I mean, he beat the Clippers in a playoff series. So, well,
yeah. I mean, that's why I said, like, three of those four have had significantly more playoff success. Yeah.
And it's the eternal caveat with Joel Embiid. He hasn't had a lot of playoff success. Is that his fault? Maybe a little bit, but obviously I think some of those other players have had better teams and kind of more stable front offices. That's definitely part of it. But look, at some point, Joe is not going to get the benefit of the doubt with the regular season awards. He's just not. And frankly, I don't think he should be playing for those anymore. I know Drew Hanlon has made some comments along those lines that he's not going to be gunning for it, which is good. But I think the way to boost your stock is for a championship or a long-term playoff thing, which again, I say that like, oh, it's easier said than done. Go do it. It's very hard. I think that's your best path. That's something that is within your control now.
And I agree with you. I think a lot of attention is focused on Embiid and being in the tier below Jokic. And I just frankly don't care too much. I think we debate the top of the league a little bit too much because it doesn't really matter. You take as many of them as you can get. I thought the Harden was interesting because I did expect him to be a little bit lower. I thought I probably expected Maxey to be a tiny bit higher. Not too much. I think the 4A ranking puts him somewhere in the like 40 to 45 range in the league. I think some Sixers fans might take a little bit of exception to that, but I think, you know, when you add in the combination of not having lead guard vision and being a negative on the defensive side of the court, could he have moved him up a little bit? Yeah, probably. But I don't think he's going to end up being a top 20 player until he corrects one of those deficiencies.
Yeah, I don't really have a problem with that rating. I mean, there's a lot of really fucking good players in that tier. He's got Ingram in that tier. He's got Darius Garland in that tier. He's got DeJounte Murray in that tier. Fred Van Vliet's in that tier. So
and a lot of them have, you know, deficiencies. And it's what deficiencies can you build around and live without? And that's where it goes into team building more than ranking, which is why I think ranking is something we argue about, especially in the offseason. But I don't place too much emphasis on it.
And this is a smaller part of it too, you know, wherever he has Maxey, you know, 45th, 46th, wherever that ends up being. The league is loaded now, man. Like the depth of talent around the league is, you know, Harden is in a tier with Ja Morant as, you know, like the 14th, 15th best player. Trae Young, like these are guys that I think a decade ago would have been way higher. And it's just, it's a good time for the league. So it's a fun offseason topic. I feel bad for Seth that he gets.
He pisses off every fan base in the league when he writes that, of course.
I think he doing it in tiers is smart because he probably pisses off
fewer.
Yeah, like 40% fewer people, but not obviously. He's not escaping the vitriol for sure. It's I thought it was fairly reasonable where he put all the people. I might put Harden a little lower just because I'm skeptical, but I will admit that Harden at his best is probably higher than a tier three player. So
any other stray thoughts here before we get out? It's been a little while since we have had one of these podcasts.
I don't really think I have any other stray thoughts. Sixers lost Vince Rosman the other day.
Yep.
He got an amazing title in Oklahoma City.
Well, it was a VP of not insight and foresight. That was the other guy. Was he a VP of?
I don't have it off the top of my head, but I can search.
It's crazy.
I can search for it real quick. But yeah, that's somebody who's been in the front office for a long time.
We're talking like not only did he predate Hinkie, but like predated Rod Thorne. Who was he? Was he a Stefanski hire? I think he probably would have been a Stefanski hire, which is just amazing.
That's insane.
Just amazing.
I mean, I was in high school.
Yeah.
Scouting as Vice President of Identification and Intelligence. I mean, that's just unbelievable.
I am no longer, because since it's my own company now, I'm no longer going to be a Sixers reporter. I'm going to be a VP of some shit. I don't know. I'll make it up.
You can't just say he's an executive who's, you know, a vice president who also is mainly scouting for you.
It's amazing. But
this guy is going to do a lot of our draft stuff. That's what they should say.
But like you said, he's been around for a long time through many different regime changes, been a part of their scouting department for a long time. A couple of high profile misses during that time, a lot of later first round and second round successes. You don't know which ones he pushed for and which ones he warned against, but a very key part of the Sixers draft organization and operations for a long time.
Yeah, and a good team to go to if you're going to be.
They need his expertise for sure. All right, that's all I have here. So thank you, Rich, for jumping on, and we will talk to you soon.
See you, man.